Harold Prince has produced or directed many of the most important musicals of the past few decades, including Damn Yankees, West Side Story, Fiddler on the Roof, Cabaret, Follies, Sweeney Todd, Company, Candide, Phantom of the Opera, and the recent revival of Showboat. He's won 20 Tony Awards. He's now producing Three, an evening of three new one-act musical comedies. It features the work of young writers, composers, directors, and actors. Prince is directing one of the musicals himself. It opens Saturday at a Philadelphia theater named in his honor, the Prince Music Theater. The theater's mission is to produce innovative new works and revivals. I talk with Harold Prince about his theater career. I asked, after he fell in love with theater, how did he know he wanted to produce and direct, but not perform?
No, I never wanted to be a performer. I'm much too terrified of the whole experience. And I never wanted to be a producer. I came out of the University of Pennsylvania. Just 20, I mean, a matter of days. And I came to New York terrified and very luckily found a job as an office boy in George Abbott's office. And he was probably the most prolific producer, director, writer in the American theater. And so I changed the water in the water cooler and I opened the windows and I stamped the letters and made myself as useful as I could. And then he actually was working on television and writing and directing. And very early on, he let me write a segment of the television show he was doing on NBC. I wrote the whole show. And then he said, why don't you direct it? I'll come and fix it up afterwards. And I did. It was Sunday night at 7, the early days of television. And I wrote and directed a half-hour television show that same year. And he came in and said, I like it, it's on. And then he did for me what I really wanted, which was to move into the theater. And I moved in as a third assistant stage manager, having never worked backstage, and learned the business from there. And I moved up in stage managing ranks. Everything I did rather quickly. Again, good luck. Between 1948, when I started with him, and 1954, there was a two-year stint in the Army, thanks to the Korean conflict, and the rest of the time in Abbott's office. And in 1954, I co-produced The Pajama Game.
The Pajama Game had several hits. Hey There, Steam Heat, Hernando's Hideaway.
Lots.
Could you guess in advance which songs were really going to...
The whole business of making musicals was different than popular music. In the United States and in Europe was a reflection of theater music back in 1954. Consequently, Rosemary Clooney had made a Hey There recording, and Frank Lesser had released it, and it was the number one song in the country when we opened the show in Boston on our way to New York. So we literally had a smash hit song before the audience even saw the show.
So this was a song that they could hum going into the theater. They didn't have to wait till they were coming out.
They could hum it going into the theater. And then came Hernando's Hideaway and Steam Heat. And one by one, each became a top number on the charts. A year later, we did Damn Yankees. And that had You Gotta Have Heart. And Eddie Fisher did that. And that was number one before we opened in Boston. So it's a very different game. The theater today does not reflect popular music, nor could it, since I don't understand what anybody's singing about most of the time.
Now, you've done several musicals with Stephen Sondheim, including Company, Follies, Sweeney Todd.
West Side Story.
What was your role in West Side Story?
Away the Forum.
What was your role in West Side Story?
That I produced.
Mm-hmm. How did you first meet Stephen Sondheim?
Well, we were good friends forever. I mean, we were we met when he was 18 and I was 20. That's a long time ago. And we were good friends, very ambitious to work in the musical theater. And we stayed best friends. He stood up for me at my wedding. As soon as I'm through with this interview, he's coming in with John Weidman to work on the next show we're doing.
That's great. I mean, I had read that you had had some kind of falling out or difference with him over
the
years.
You mustn't believe. You're in the media business. Don't believe what you read. We're actually, all we did was come up with a clinker after having 9 or 10 years of artistic and sometimes financial success, and we decided maybe we should get away from each other for a while and get a fresh view on things. The while lasted longer, I'm sure, than either of us intended.
Okay,
the 19 years.
The funny thing is, that clinker, if you're talking about Merrily We Roll Along?
Yeah.
That clinker is one of my favorite shows.
The score is, Steve's score for Merrily We Roll Along is as good as anything he's ever written. It's just a great score. The problem with that show was, I think, and they're doing it again, and it'll get done again and again, people keep trying to make it work, really work, and I think the technique of the storytelling really did it in. I, on the other hand, didn't help, because I couldn't envision what it should look like. I had a meeting in my office before we went into rehearsal with that show, and I said, look, everybody, I have a problem. I want to do this without scenery and without costumes on a bare stage, and maybe have just some racks of clothes that kids go and choose for themselves to play scenes. That's what I want to do. This was 1980. My office team said, you do what you want to do. And then I didn't have the guts. I thought, how can you charge people whatever we were charging in 1980 to see a Broadway show and not give them, quote, scenery and costumes? And I was too dumb to realize maybe you should charge them less and do what you want to do. But I didn't have the guts. Today I would have the guts. It's too late.
I'm wondering if working with Sondheim and working with his sometimes really innovative songs, if you felt that you had to find different ways of making that transition from talking to singing within the productions.
Not really. I think we both want the same thing from the theater. And honestly, by the time I did Cabaret, which was in 1966, and before all the shows I directed that Steve wrote, I discerned that I wanted a different kind of experience on the musical theater stage. You don't set out to be innovative. You set out to satisfy yourself. And so that's precisely why. Once I'd done Cabaret, not only was it a huge success, but it was extremely different in structure and content than any other musical before it. And I said, oh, look, it's working. You've got a vote of confidence here. Now go on and just do what you want to do. And Steve's the perfect person to do it with.
Well, let me ask you, when you decided to produce West Side Story, were you concerned at all about what it would be like for gang members to make that transition from talking on the street to singing and dancing?
I had so much respect for Bernstein, Robbins, Sondheim, and Arthur Lawrence, who wrote the book. Very canny job, too. Very, very creative. I was just excited to be part of it. The sound of it, the look of it, everything. Was the way it moved, the way things meshed. The creators are fond of saying it was not a watershed musical. Well, I think it was, if for no better reason than it's the first time in the history of the theater where the actors sang and danced as much as they acted. In fact, many of them were better dancers than they were actors, but it all meshed that way. Prior to then, as in Oklahoma and Carousel, Agnes DeMille had separate casts do the dancing. So when they got to the big ballets, there was someone dancing for each principal role. That was clearly a bridge to what Jerry Robbins did when everybody did everything.
You know, it's interesting. You've done a lot of work with Stephen Sondheim. You've also done work with Andrew Lloyd Webber, directing Evita and the original production of Phantom of the Opera. And in some ways, it's easy, you might not find this fair, but it's easy to think of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Stephen Sondheim as being at opposite ends of contemporary music theater. Sondheim writing really challenging music that some people think goes over the heads of some audiences, whereas Andrew Lloyd Webber is a real crowd pleaser, and some people find his music, you know, comparatively shallow. So you've got two different ends here, both of which you've been very successful with.
Well, that's the I guess the accepted diagnosis of the two gentlemen's work. I would argue with so much of it, you don't want to take up the time.
No, I do. I was expecting your comeback.
you just got it. What they have in common is much more important than what is disparate about them. Essentially, they both love the theater, and they love what makes the theater, musical theater, unique. They understand the space. They have ideas about how to surprise an audience. It's called theatrical minds. They both have those. They have two very different minds. So how that then gets expressed is by those two very different minds. I'm in the catbird seat in this instance. I get to be the director, so I can shift from one man's strengths to the other man's strengths. I'm in the catbird seat. I've also lived rather a long time, so I've been able not just to work with them, but with Kander and Ebb and Bach and Harnack and Leonard Bernstein. So it's a hell of a spectrum of different but equally important musical theater voices. That's what I'd say.
My guest is theater producer and director Harold Prince. He's producing an evening of 3 one-act shows called Three that opens Saturday at the Prince Music Theater in Philadelphia. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Harold Prince. He produced or directed such musicals as West Side Story, Fiddler on the Roof, Cabaret, Company, Sweeney Todd, Phantom of the Opera, and the recent revival of Showboat. A lot of musicals on Broadway are revivals, and you have both premiered a lot of new and groundbreaking musicals, but you've also been involved with revivals. First of all, some of the musicals you originally produced or directed have been revived, including Cabaret, plus you did the revival of Showboat on Broadway a few years ago.
Showboat is really the revival that I did, but it was really a rethinking.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky enough to get Rodgers and Hammerstein, and most particularly William Hammerstein, who is an old friend, to let me really reshape that musical, the second act particularly. Remember, the musical was over 70-some-odd years old when I went to work on it. It had been the first great, really great American musical, and it changed everything that followed it. The fact is, it had a rather a powerful first act and a rather oddly shaped second act for a number of reasons. Probably one was that when this show opened in 1927, they'd never seen anything like it. So some of the machinery of it was old-fashioned, and some of it was as brave and courageous and new as anything could possibly be. I wanted to make it all one piece, and they gave me the right to. I restored a bunch of numbers that were considered too serious for the original version or for the audiences in 1927. And those numbers are among the most beautiful in this score. Then I added two montages, which Susan Stroman staged, which put the show in the context of the time in which this story is being told. It covers 40-some-odd years in the lives of a family. It used to just hop, skip, and jump over puddles, really, to cover those years. We meshed those years together by telling you what was going on in the United States during that time. Most potently, the show was about miscegenation, the marriage of a black girl and a white man, which was unacceptable in the South in 1880. We told the story 40 years on, and it was still unacceptable when the show closes, which is in the 1920s. There were people still drinking out of separate water fountains, still going to separate facilities and using them and so on, still eating, riding in the back of the bus and eating in separate restaurants. So there's a lot of political stuff there that always makes me feel better when I'm working in the theater, along with some of the most beautiful music and one of the loveliest stories anybody ever got to tell.
Do you still love going to the theater, even though you have so much involved in it yourself?
I don't love going to the theater as much as I used to, because most theatrical priorities are not what they used to be. However, if I go to see something like Proof, which hasn't opened on Broadway yet, but I've seen, or The Tale of the Allergist's Wife, which I've seen, I'm very grateful to be part of the theater community. There are fewer of those experiences right now, but nevertheless, I do feel them. And this is the beginning of a season, and I've just mentioned two shows which haven't opened yet that make me very proud to be part of that community.
I'd like to close with some music. I'm wondering if you would like to choose a song from one of your many productions.
Sure. Hang on now, because you know what I'm doing? I'm trying to think of the name of the judge's song, but that's Pretty Women.
Pretty Women, okay.
Why don't you play Pretty Women?
Okay, good.
It's gorgeous, and it's complicated, and it's worth saying that this absolutely beautiful song culminates in the barber slitting the throat of the judge who's singing it with him.
Okay, so
that's how complex musical theater can get.
So this is from Sweeney Todd. Harold Prince, thank you so much for talking with us.
It's a pleasure.
And
I love your questions.
Three. Oh, thank you. Good luck with Three in Philadelphia.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Nice talking
now.
To you.
Oh, pretty women.
Pretty women, yes.
Quickly, sir. Splash of beer.